Well, good morning. It's a beautiful day. I'm so happy that you have decided to spend it indoors with me. the topic today that I'd like to talk about is doing language experience stories digitally with life learners. And ESL people love our acronyms, so can you guys tell me, what do you think LIFE stands for?
Learners with interrupted
formation. Oh, you are the winner, yeah. So today's talk is going to focus quite a lot on these type of learners with interrupted formal education. And even more specifically than that, I work with learners who have come to Canada with almost 0 to maybe 1 or 2 years of formal education of origin. Most of my learners are, about 90% of them are women, and most of them come from war-torn countries such as Afghanistan, various African countries, various Middle Eastern countries. And so that's the type of learner that this talk focuses on, and showing some ways that technology can be used with this type of learner who are sometimes considered low learners. I would call them orally talented learners. And so this is the type of learner that I'll be talking about today. Although if you work with another type of learner, I hope you'll be able to take away some ways that you could work with the learners that you work with as well. Some of the principles I think would work very well for any type of ESL learner as well. So today I'm going to start off talking a little bit about what are life learners like and what are their needs. And just a brief refresher on the language experience approach. I feel this is the approach that works the best with the demographic that I work with, and so just a very brief refresher on that approach. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about how turning language experience stories into paper-based books, first of all, and sort of the evolution of my thinking in terms of working with paper-based books and then moving into creating digital books for and with life learners. Oh, hi again. Somebody's seeing this for the second time. I beefed it up. then I'm going to talk about some of the advantages of using digital books with life learners. And if we have some time, and I hope we do, I want to make a very short digital book with you today to show you how easy this process can be in the ESL classroom and how immediate it can be in the ESL classroom. So don't let me talk on and on. Give me at least 20 minutes at the end so that we can make a digital book together today. And at the end, I'll just wrap it up and talk about some technological and privacy considerations you need to think about when creating digital books for and with your learners. So, life learners. Life learners are adults who are learning to speak English at the same time they are learning to read and write for the first time in any significant way. So this is the part of it that was new to me when I first started teaching ESL literacy, that these learners are learning to read, not reading to learn. And so the sequence of how I present materials in an ESL literacy classroom is very different from when I was teaching academic students with educational background. So these learners are not yet fully able to use reading to learn new language strategies and concepts. So the initial introduction of any materials in the LIFE classroom usually begins orally and kinesthetically. very and experientially, very, very important point. And then we move into reading what we already know orally and experientially. The task of reading and writing for learners in this demographic is extremely difficult. And so if you add on learning new vocabulary and learning new language through reading, you're probably not going to be very successful. So you'll see that the sequence of events in this kind of classroom always begins orally, which may be different from when you're teaching academic students. So just very briefly, some characteristics of these learners. These learners learn very well by doing, watching, and participating. When I talk to my students about how they've learned, what they've learned in their life, they talk to me about sitting beside their mother, and their mother doing a new task, and then sitting beside and doing it as their mother is doing it. So, and storytelling as they're learning. And so text usually isn't involved in the learning of something new. The learners that I work with tend to be social and communal learners. I rarely get a student who independently decides they're going to go off and learn a new task on their own and figure something out on their own. Usually their background tends to be as a community of learners working together. And I hope as I'm going through these, you'll view these as strengths that they bring to their learning rather than deficit, because all of these things really contribute to their literacy acquisition as well. Again, they are oral and kinesthetic learners. So the classroom that I work in, we are rarely sitting. We're moving about. We're going on probably 3 or 4 field trips a week and learning in the actual physical settings of what I'm trying to teach. So poor English here. But again, they have limited experience using print. About half of my class come from communities where there has been no print in the communities at all. So they are coming from a pre-literate background, and so have no experience using their eyes to attain information. Information is usually coming through their ears and through talking. But the other half are maybe come from a literate society, but text, for a lot of them, is still a mysterious entity, and they still prefer to get their information through their ears. I can't stress the next point enough. Concept development is one of the major things that happens in an ESL literacy classroom. So in many other types of ESL, you are transferring vocabulary directly from one language to another and concepts. And all ESL class, there's concept development because there's cultural differences. But this is extremely pronounced in the ESL literacy classroom. So I would say both cultural concepts as well as educational concepts. So people who have not been to school before may not know that the earth is round, or they may not know the different shapes have different names, or so when we're teaching is in the classroom, for example, maybe you'll be doing something on classroom and you say, what color are your eyes? And half the class says white. and you start to talk to the student, describing my eyes as white because the whiter the eye, you find yourself backing up a lot in the ESL classroom to think about, am I just transferring vocabulary over, or am I teaching the... Another really good example, we were talking about, I have 2 eyes, I have 1 nose, I have 2 ears. But a student said, well, I have 2 noses.
Yeah.
2 noses. And again, or that might be a cultural concept, or it might be an educational
concept as well.
Please interrupt and ask at any point if you...
Sorry?
Eyes?
Sky.
Sky. Yeah.
Blue eyes.
Blue eyes, I was talking.
Eyes is another step.
Yes.
So sometimes you will say sky.
Yes, the sky is above me, yeah.
Why is that plural for sky?
I think often in English we only use that in poetic form, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
I guess, when we're talking, yeah. I don't know. And again, probably this, I'm going to go to the next point. Let's just add, may have difficulties with patterns, categories, and analysis. The point you just brought up would be a good point that might be difficult to talk about, you know, verbs and nouns, and I usually have to find, and that kind of discussion has to take a bit of a different form in my kind of classroom. For example, when I'm talking about nouns and verbs in my class, I'm about things you can touch and how you move. All the flashcards in my class might be color-coded with the things you can touch. Again, this point is also very important. And I don't mean this in any kind of a negative way. The students in ESL literacy classrooms tend to be very self-referenced. And at the beginning, at least, working with fiction can be very difficult. Because, or if I ask questions about the story after it's done, the student, why you would answer questions for somebody else that they don't. Low-level ESL classrooms need to be personally relevant. And as you can imagine, the students in this type of class require a great deal of teacher support. Even how to sit and what do you do in a classroom. Even, say, three-year-old children in Canada will have seen TV shows of what you do at school, but a lot of my students have no idea. So we have feet up on tables, and we have people getting up to sharpen their pencil as the teacher, just various interesting things. So learning to learn how to learn is a massive part of the ESL literacy classroom. So learning some new techniques on how to learn. A lot of our learners have a fairly limited repertoire of what to getting information through their eyes. So basically, if I had to summarize what is a life learner or what is my job, and a really good example of this is we could spend 2 hours in class creating a bulletin board with new vocabulary. 5 minutes later, we could go to another. Well, if you don't know how to spell it, what can you do? Okay. So the method that I'm going to be talking about quite a bit now is having someone record them, and that becomes the text. So if I go back to the previous screen, so students sharing their stories, me recording them, and how would that satisfy some of these kind of needs? And I think for me, approach is this area. If the students are experiencing new concepts in a practical way, if they need to have the oral language before they can read it, this is the best way to ensure that they have that oral language before they are trying to read it, or that's new language, new grammar. Demographic. Whoops. This is just a statement I semi-plagiarized. From memory, but the language experience approach teaches learners that text is not, that reading is just listening on paper and writing is just, that just seems second nature, but to a living, just learning the basic fact that text has meaning. Okay, so when I first started teaching ESL literacy, maybe a lot of language experience stories I'd say, what did you do on your weekend? And then I'd get them to be successful. But ended up with the same story every time. I cooked, I cleaned, I watched my kids. And this was, there was sort of one remarkable story of somebody who maybe got into a cook. I found it hard to make that. So just an example of that. If you look, book, and I'm not sure that all the tables have it, so if some tables don't have it, can you hold it up and show the other? An example, this yellow book, is an example of a book I made maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Valley Village, I took numerous photographs, and we created by pen paper, and we would tell the story. Later, I'd go back to my office and create
the book for the students, and I look at the blue. It's a slightly different kind of book I created before or Stampede and before we had a shared experience. Here, there's text on each page and then a blank square underneath each text. And so this one is called the Stampede Passport, and during Stampede Week, we would do many of the activities in this book and with the stamped pages. So they would be copying, they would create their own story based on the pages that were stamped. And then again, seeing that writing a story about yourself is a slightly higher level than for example of that is the pink. Students were going to, the other two examples are maybe going a little bit away from the idea. Books were books I made in response to direct needs. Halloween, maybe a few years ago, I had all started sharing stories about how terrifying. Bad flu season, I had a lot of students heading to, we talked a lot about the process of calling HealthLink and how to, so these two I guess would be slightly not quite.
I think one of the beautiful things about language experience that I want to say is it helps students to access text well and allows them to, they learn to read them well before they have the reading level to read them. A lot of time. And I think that's why I'm now moving into digital. Important for literacy students. If you come with a book 5 days after I haven't moved away from this, but we still do this kind of thing. Or leave this from, I might do one or two of these a term, whereas...
Okay.
So, I'm going to move into digital books. So, about 5 years ago, I decided to start playing with the idea of using everybody knows, and or almost everybody knows, and it was something that, as I go through, I'm going to be talking about using PowerPoint, but I want you to know there's a multitude of presentation software that you could use that would be do a lot cooler things than PowerPoint. I just wanted something simple that I was familiar with that I wouldn't have a big learning curve for me. That would create files that the students could access easily, and that was...
So I'm just going to go through one or two digital books that I created with... Oh, yeah?
I just want to ask you something about
On which site, there's some really wonderful digital... The talk that I'm doing today, I
get inspired to do the same. So what I'm going to do is just go through a couple samples of some digital books I made with my students. After I finish that, I'm going to show you a couple of very low-tech videos of my classroom of me teaching. So I'll just show you one example. This first book is called The Market, and I do something like this every fall at Thanksgiving time. We're talking about Thanksgiving and the market, in Calgary. My heart is in Saskatoon. In Calgary, it's very close to school, and I do an annual field trip to the Crossroads Market at this time. While we're there, I'm also teaching students a strategy. Fresh BC Bartlett pears, or organic blah, 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 cherries. And English is very beautiful in that all the descriptors are, they know the words orally, and in this case, they can just get a general idea at this point. So we go on the field trip. The students are recording the various fruits and vegetables in their best deal. And when we come back, we do the story. So here's just an example of this book. So when we first look at the story in class, all there are is pictures. There's no text. And we go through and by looking at the pictures alone. And this is in itself is a type of telling a story in a linear, first this happened, very new in some cultures, and so just looking at the pictures and telling the story as we go through and predicting what will come next,
We spend a lot of time.
Sometimes I even have the pictures on paper and we physically sequence the pictures before we ever get to this stage. But in class, eventually, what we create, so this will not be here in class, the pictures will be here. And I've inserted some navigation tools for the students as well. So when the digital book is completed, the only digital skill they actually need to know how to do is double click through the story. So let's just go through this book, and as I do, I'll talk about some of the principles of creating a good digital book for literacy learners. So in this one, I have the text coming up at the same time as the picture, but you can easily also have it so that the text doesn't come up, so that they're forced to look at the picture and then click for this to come up as well. In this one, I don't have it that way. I have them together. But you can make the story so that the text comes up second, so that they're having to use the strategy of using the picture before. After my digital book is created, I also insert some sound of this so that the students later on when they're looking at the book independently can click here and listen.
It is on in Calgary.
I'm not a very good radio person, but that's my voice. And you could also record the student's voice telling the story. That's something I haven't played with that much, but I'm thinking that might be a good way to go. So it is fall in Calgary. They turn the page by clicking on this arrow. This teaches another literacy of arrow directionality. Thanksgiving is coming. This is a stock photo that's free off the internet that I just inserted there, as is this one. We want to buy food. And then now it starts in with the photographs of our actual field trip day. So we go to the bus stop. We wait for the bus. And then what number? And then this is another beautiful thing about a digital book is, as we were on our field trip, we were also learning some literacy in the community, like how to tell where our bus would stop. So as we were walking to the bus stop, we were looking at different signs to find. I told them it's not bad. This one just reinforces. And then in class, when we're reading this together, it's a really good reflection, again, on the literacy strategies we were learning in the community. Also, it serves as an artifact for them when they finally get the copy of this to remember how to get back to this very important place for them. Most of them want to go back and be able to find it again. So here comes the bus, and then again, it's showing that the number here is the same as the number on the sign. And now we're on the bus, and this is one of the students. Parminder takes the bus. Amina takes the bus, Abiba takes the bus. This is something I would stress for literacy students, is to have repetitive language structures in the story. And it might seem very repetitive to you, but for the students it's invaluable to their learning. So having some of the same sentence stems. In this way, a student can read a 20-page book and feel really empowered that they've read a 20-page book, but the actual number of words is small. And also, I don't know, there's statistics on how many times a student has to see a sight word. So, what is it?
70,
yeah. So repetitive words in the story. So Abiba takes the bus, Marian takes the bus, Nibul takes the bus. And then here I've introduced a new sentence stem, adding with the and. Sandy and Ma take the bus. The word and is introduced. Abdul and Amal take the bus. Hawar and Diana take the bus. I went back to a single one. Not sure why I did it that way. We get to the market. And then which word is market? And again, looking at the sign, and again, it's showing text that might look a little strange to them in a different font. All of this vocabulary is vocabulary we practiced a lot as we were doing this activity and before we were doing this activity, none of these words would be something they haven't heard before orally or used before orally. So we look at the address. I love this building because look at how huge that address is. And so this is so good for our students. Learning how to understand addresses is a part of what I teach. And so we look at the address and we write the address. So the students on their market book on the back are copy down. Better literacy than them. They can make it back here if they want to. So we find vegetables and fruit. We look at the signs. Again, farm fresh tomatoes and here, it's gonna go up and show that one, but again, showing them how to cover up the beginning letters to find the word that they're looking for to copy down. And again, now we're reflecting again strategy as we're doing the digital book in class. We read the signs. We write in our books. We write the food and the price. And again, here comes the repetitive structures again. In this case, sometimes when I do a digital book, I'll highlight the vocabulary that I'm interested in another color. In my class, I always do nouns blue and verbs always, or pink. And so highlight all of the vocabulary that's in that book. I might highlight it in blue. I didn't do that in this book, but it's something to think about. So Amal writes onions, Yawish writes tomatoes, Jawahir writes tomatoes, and the next one, Abiba writes potatoes, and I purposely put tomatoes and potatoes together because they're two words that the students, the shape of them is very similar, and so for them to start. Marian writes turnips, Amina and Abuk write yams, Abdul writes squash, Parminder and Sandy write mushrooms. And then, what is Sarah writing? And then again, I thought this was fairly simple, but when students were actually out there and realized that they could find something meaningful on be able to find this word that they know here and be able to write it down. This works really well at the market. This strategy is terrible at the grocery store. So the signs at the grocery store do not work this way. This is one of the reasons this field trip is to the market and not to the grocery store. Here's a question, Mona, how much is the cabbage? And again, an arrow comes down. Better on the screen, you can see it a little bit better. Very expensive cabbage, $30, but you get a whole sack of it. Is it 20 minutes left? Okay, so I'm just gonna skip through this, the rest of this story. So I have a couple of other examples. This example I'm gonna show you right now, I just wanna show you very quickly because that was a fairly involved story, but I also wanna show you that you can do one in class very quickly as well. This one is called Everybody is Sick Today. I had a day where everybody was sick. I whipped out the camera, and some students talked about actual health, and some students talked about made up. But as we went through this, I took the pictures directly in the classroom. I plugged the camera into the computer in the classroom, and we created the story start to finish within an hour in class. I went at coffee break. I actually photocopied it from the internet the same way your notes pages is. And students copied the bar of stories that we used throughout the term. So I'm just going to whip through this one. So it was a running joke in our class about how many students would be sick that day. So then this, I thought, was a good one to do. So I have another one here I won't show you about making icing in class. We made icing and then as a precursor to learning how to read a recipe, and we went through the process, and I won't show that one here. I'm just going to show a quick video about writing the text as a class. This is a semi-staged video of some students looking at actually a Value Village trip and writing the thing. So I'll just show you this.
Okay. So good morning. How's everybody today? It's good to see you. Do you guys remember remember last week we went to, where did we go?
Valley Village.
What does this say? Oops. Just a sec. Let me change my... What does this one say?
So they're looking at a screen the same way you guys are looking at the screen.
What did we do when we went to Valley Village last week? We went to Valley Village, we went shopping, we leave the school, we go there. How did we get to Valley Village? How did we get there? Did we walk all the way?
No.
Okay, we took the train. Yeah. And then 5 more minutes walking. Beautiful day?
No.
No. Okay, so today, guys, I want to make a story with you about our day when we went to Valley Village. Okay? So again, what does this one say?
Valley Village.
Okay, and I'm just going to change the screen. What are we doing in this picture?
School.
We leave school. So I'm going to write what you told me up here, okay? So what does this say?
We leave school.
Perfect. Okay? Let's look at another picture. What are we doing in this picture?
We're walking to the sea train,
yeah. Okay? So I'm going to write what you told me up here, and then you see if you can read it, okay?
So, do you get the general idea? Okay. I'm just going to stop that and maybe head... So, maybe I'll skip this one. This one is a little video of one of the learners actually reading the text after it's complete. But I'll show you one more. I want you to watch this video and tell me what strategy am I trying to get at with this student and what strategy isn't she using. And this is actually a student, interestingly, with about 2 or 3 years of education in Oromo, which has the same writing system as English. She has enough education to know that letters and sounds, and so she's excellent at decoding, terrible at reading for meeting. I could give her Spanish and she'd be happy as a clown reading it in class. And so for her, I'm working toward whole language and trying to see meaning in the whole. She's not bad, actually, in getting there. And so let's have a look at, uh-oh. Too bad. Let's see if this one... No. Okay. Well, maybe I'll... I think I'll just leave that just because of, for time's sake, okay? Basically, as she's reading, her whole focus is down here because she knows the words are important, totally forgetting to look up here to see if this can help her with this. And so what I'm trying to do is to get her looking at the picture to predict... what vocabulary will be down here. Actually, let me just see if I can get that video for you. Oh, there we go.
Okay. Would you like to read now?
The train is coming. Yeah. Estefanos in
Shinook Station.
see she's a little more successful when...
Work to value village. Good meeting you.
All of these students have value village right away as sight words. They'll never forget value and village. And okay, let's come back. So how much time do we have left? 15 more minutes left in the... Okay. Boy, I would love to talk about this forever. I'm going to just skip to another video that I'm hoping will work here. Oh. In the video up here, it shows us practicing the verbs for this with no text, practicing TPR and practicing kinesthetic movements for the words and showing how this then makes them more successful reading. So the verbs are leave, take, go, put on. They're all words that we learned at Value Village. And so, actually, I'll show the TPR, what the heck, if it works. I hope it does.
So guys, in this story, when we were reading it, there's lots of words for doing, right?
Yeah.
So let's see if we can remember some. Can everybody leave?
Yeah.
Everybody leave. Good. Bye-bye. Can everybody go?
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye. Can we come back? Can everybody find?
Find.
Oh, there it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Can everybody try on?
Try on.
Good.
Yeah.
We're going to try on. Okay. Can everybody walk? Okay. Everybody put?
Put table.
Good. Can everybody take the train though? How do we take the train? Well, that's take, but how do we take the train? You show me.
Yeah.
Remember? We're taking the train, right? Okay. Can everybody look?
So I'll just skip to the next one. And then now we're going back and now doing the reading. So again, oral to reading progression. I have the list of words here.
Now, I'm not going to say the words. Now we're going to be quiet.
Okay.
I'm just going to point. You, no, you do. Okay? So we're going to be quiet this time, okay? Okay.
Work.
Why? Okay. Oh, Hannah, try again, Hannah. Yeah.
So.
Good. Beautiful. Wow, you guys remember so much.
Okay, so again, maybe the takeaway from this type of, from this particular activity is this set of sight word verbs. And maybe we would be practicing them a lot. Everything that I do in these books, then I create the exercises to go along with the books. Okay, just for time's sake, boy, that time is flying fast. I want to just do a quick thing on making a digital book, just to show you the process. So, what should the topic of our book be? Shelley's presentation, okay. So, everybody smile. Oh no, okay, well, I don't know, batteries, and I just put fresh ones in. Okay, so I'll tell you the process and then I'll insert a different picture. Okay.
A really good point when you are bringing a camera to school. Okay, so I would take the picture and what I would do is then hook it up with a USB cable straight into the computer after the pictures were taken. Computers are lovely now. Before, you used to have specific software for specific cameras. Nowadays, the computers recognize cameras.
And so I just put the USB cable in class, throw all the pictures onto the desktop usually, and then bring up a PowerPoint
book. So I'll use, maybe just a sec, I'm going to just save a picture from here. Let's, okay. So I don't recreate the wheel every time I make a digital book. I have a template that I created years ago that I just insert the pictures into in class. And that template that I have is available to any of you. If you email me, I'll send you the template. You don't have to create it from scratch if you are interested in making a digital book. So, okay, so here is my template. A template has three kinds of screens, or three kinds of pages. The title page that will move you to the next page. A middle screen that will move you back to the first page or forward to the next page. And a final screen that can move you back to the previous page. I shouldn't have this in here. I'm going to take that right out. We don't need that because it's the end. It'll take you back to the previous page. Or if you click the house, what will happen? Where is home? Page one. Or in the presentation. So what I do, so the title of our book here is called Symposium, maybe? And what I do here is just insert, I get rid of this and insert a picture. So I'll get rid of this. Are most of you very familiar with PowerPoint? Is this something that is not new? It's useful, okay. So I'll insert a picture, and I'm gonna go to the desktop and insert that picture of Sarah that I stole out of my other digital book. And I can size it how I want by grabbing on here. And maybe this guy I'll bring to the front. Okay, so now I've just created a page of my book. If you want to create your own template from scratch, these navigation buttons are very easy to create yourself. You go insert, shapes. Insert shapes, and if you come right down to the bottom, you insert an action button. So here, this action button is to go to the next page. This action button is to go to the previous page. It's fairly simple. So I would then go and insert the button, and you can change colors or however you want. So that's how you create those navigation buttons for the students. If I'm going too fast or too slow, just let me know. So now I have one page of my book finished. If I want additional pages in the book, which you probably would, you can select the page, and I do my copying by right-click. I'm not sure how everybody else does their copying, but I'm going to go copy and then insert here and say paste. So now I have two pages with Sarah. So here's the next page. I delete this picture and insert the next picture. Okay? And then at the end, the last page, I might type in the end or something to show that that's the end of the book. Now if you want to insert sound into your file, that's also very easy. If you go insert and then sound, and then you can find your file, your sound file. I don't know, I record my sounds in our language lab at school, but if you have a little MP3 recorder or there's various ways to record little sound bites. So I'm going to find my sound here. So this comes up. How do you want the sound to start in the slideshow?
I always say when clicked, because I want the students to use that as a support at the beginning and then later maybe.
So when clicked, here's my little sound button. I can move it where I want. I can make it bigger. So then if I view this slide, I can then...
We are at a workshop.
So I guess the text of this slide is we are at a workshop. And so that's how we insert the sound. Okay, so that's a very, very quick rundown of how you can make a digital book. But if anybody's interested in having the template and not figuring out how to make the template, my email address is at the very end of your handout, and you can email me also. Okay, so sharing it with the students is lots of experimentation. Now I'll tell you the final way that I share with the students. When you guys are in PowerPoint, very important to save this file in a different format. And I'm going to show you how to do that. So this is the PowerPoint. We're going to save as. And I'm going to save it onto the desktop here. I'm going to name it Symposium. If you go to File or Save As Type, don't save it as a PowerPoint, because if you save it as a PowerPoint, the students are then on the work table of PowerPoint. It's very confusing for them to be able to then... what you can do is come down to PowerPoint Show. Or I'm gonna save it, not PowerPoint Show, PowerPoint 97 to 2000, let's see. This one, PowerPoint 97 to 2003 Show, then it can work sort of in any version. When it's saved as a show, so I'm going to save it as the show, where's my show? So there's my actual file, Symposium. All I need to do then to access this is to double click on this, and it automatically comes up as the story. So all the students have to be able to do, or you need to teach them to do, double click on one icon. And to make it even simpler for students, what I have, what I do is put all of the students, so as the term, as a rewrite CD, so you can add, I add all of their, there's no typing involved for the students to access, navigate the internet very well, or to type in URLs or anything like this. I prefer a CD method for my students. No, well, about half of them do. The beautiful, what I do is I teach them, we do the book in the class, then we do it in pair groups in the computer. I have a beautiful little device called a splitter, which allows me to have two sets of headphones in the computer lab for they can read together. Very important is independence. Now they're reading in pair groups in the computer lab. Then our college has all walk over to the library. I show them how to plug in their headphones. The thing about that PowerPoint show format is that you don't have to have PowerPoint to use it. I think it's really important for our students to move toward gaining some outside of class time. And I think going to our library, all of the files that you insert into the PowerPoint, but the beautiful thing is you can hide them so that the students, if you click on the files and go to properties, hide all the files except for the name of. So I actually don't have a CD drive here, but I have, but if you plug this into the computer, the all that will come up is the icon for the actual PowerPoint show. Having 25 things there is not going to work for anything. And so, yeah.